Welcome back to another episode of M&A Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today we're here at the Winter Conference, and joining me, Steve Monterosso.
Yes, you pronounced it well. There we go. There we go.
With my Russian accent, because you have a very pretty last name.
Thank you very much. You nailed it.
So, do people get your last name messed up often?
They butcher it pretty often. They either add an extra R or an extra S, one of the two.
That's annoying. Yeah. I can relate to that, though, because my name is pretty long and complicated, too.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being at the conference.
Definitely.
What has been your favorite part so far?
You know what? The conference, it's always the engagement with folks. What I find about AM&AA is that the relationships just seem more genuine. So I always walk away from this event with, I almost want to say friends, right? Where it's like, okay, we're going to hang out after this. And also the deal making that happens.
Absolutely.
Both are very exciting.
Absolutely. Yep. So, but we'll talk about your best networking advice here in a little bit. I'm interested to hear about that. But Steve, I'm very honored to have you on our podcast because you are very widely known and respected among the AM&AA atmosphere, ecosystem,
wow,
whatever you want to call
that.
It. Yes, so we are very excited to have you on our podcast. Your rise did not happen overnight. You had quite the journey. So let's start with that first. For those who don't know you, you can reintroduce yourself or just share your journey of how you became so successful at what you do.
Definitely. It was definitely not a short journey. It was a long journey. I didn't skip a single rung in a ladder. And so it was definitely climbing the ladder. I would say the rise was really just taking on responsibility that I didn't have to take on. I think that was one of the key elements, right? I don't know if you've ever heard the saying, fake it till you make it. I faked it until I made it, right? I put myself in a lot of those very uncomfortable situations that helped grow me, right? So it was long hours, long nights, just making sure that if I didn't know how to do something, I figured it out, right? So. And that's been kind of my story from the very beginning to present. As I mentioned, I didn't skip a rung. I started in a call center, you know, making 30K a year. And I moved myself every single rung. So I didn't skip a single step in that process.
What did that climb felt like for you?
It felt long, right? It was a long climb. But, you know, it was enjoyable. It's what I really enjoy doing, because when you put yourself in those uncomfortable positions, you learn just so much from that, right? And so much more than you can learn from schooling, from any other experience. It's the raw experience. So it was enjoyable. It's been a fun road, and I'd like to say that road has come to an end, but it hasn't, right? I'm still growing and learning, and still stretching myself in any way possible.
And I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce you fully. You are the CEO of ShareBull.
Correct. CEO and refounder.
Yes. So take me back to the day when you decided to step into the industry.
When I decided to step into the industry, meaning in tech.
Yes, in tech data.
Yeah. You're taking me back probably 18 years ago.
Yeah.
I came from an industry that was going through some turbulent times. It was the 2008, right, during the real estate market crash. I was an investor, did a bunch in real estate, and I just needed to find something different, right? And so I interviewed with this company. The company was called 8x8. They did voice over IP. They were very early cloud type solution, and that was where my journey started. It started in a call center, making cold calls, being an inside sales rep, and I moved my way up through the corporate chain, primarily through sales and marketing and handling all the go-to-market functions. And so from there, I've been at small startups to mid-sized startups to Fortune 500 companies. But my sweet spot and where I most enjoy is really in the startup realm. So,
what qualities does a person needs to have to step into, once again, I repeat myself, that industry, data, technology, what kind of quality and skills does a person needs to have?
You know, I think the biggest skill set they have to have is drive, right? Drive and grit, ready to grind it out and do what it takes to be successful. I also think curiosity is extremely important. Being curious, asking questions, being observant, right? And observing through others, learning from their mistakes through their success. I would say that would be another attribute that makes people successful. Those would probably be the big two, really. And just the willingness to roll up your sleeves, wear multiple hats, and just immerse yourself in it.
Mm-hmm. And back in your days when you were working at the call center, what was harder, to get people to believe in you as a young, you know, just like beginning to work on your career professional, or in your vision?
You know, the calls, when I first started, it was definitely getting people to believe in me. I actually didn't come from a background of education. Education didn't start until much later in life for me. You know, I went back to college. I did it more as a formality. And so I didn't have the college degree to support why I should be in the roles that I've been in. So really, I think it was that, right? It was building the trust first and then getting them to believe in my vision from there. The vision doesn't land until you've built the trust as an individual, as a contributor, as someone who executes. And that goes on even today in the role that I'm in today. Right. The trust is built through being in the trenches, executing, showing the results. Those are things that build the trust so that they say, hey, I believe in his vision and where he's going and what he's doing, and that he's going to be unstoppable in accomplishing that.
Mm-hmm. And as a co-founder?
No, not a co-founder. Refounder.
Refounder.
Yeah, refounder. So
explain that to people who don't understand the difference, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I turned the business around. I basically took and redesigned our website, redesigned our go-to-market strategy, changed up our logo, basically refounded the company, right? Really turned it around, went from zero, back to being profitable and growing revenue. And so that's been my emphasis and where my focus has been.
Mm-hmm. Why did you do that?
You know,
what's the story behind that? Why share both?
You know, it always comes down to, I love challenging environments. Right. I like signing up for things that make me feel uncomfortable, because it goes back to what I stated earlier. There's so much learning that happens when you do that. And ShareVault for me was very different. Right. It was a turnaround. So I was leading a turnaround, leading a transformation. Above and beyond that, most of my experience building up to date was really VC backed companies where resources were not constraints. It was like, hey, here's 20 million. Go grow and scale. Growing and scaling a bootstrapped company, very, very different. And so I learned a ton about that. Also, what attracted me about it is I just began to love the M&A space as I learned more and more about it. Mm-hmm. And so I started to really lean in and embrace that. And that's what keeps kind of my my mind still in the game and what fires me up every morning.
Mm-hmm. How were you not scared of just loss? And this going completely wrong, not, you know, the success story that we have now.
Yeah.
How were you so confident?
You know, I think it's because I failed in the past. I've failed. And I guess I'm a prime example of fail fast methodology, right? Fail fast. So I tend to do that really well. I'll fail fast and get back up and let's figure it out. I wouldn't say I wasn't scared, right? Challenges and being put in those types of situations are hard. Learning is difficult. It's not easy. Otherwise, everyone would do it. I just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just enjoy it is the best way to say it. When it comes to those types of challenges, you know, I think the enjoyment trumps the fear, knowing that, okay, you're going to do something you've never done and you're going to come out successful on the other end. You may fail a few times while you're trying to do it, but you're going to do it. And having that level of confidence gets you there, right?
Yes, absolutely. When you first got involved in the, you know, M&A space, did you see this kind of growth happening? Was this your dream, or was this something that you were like, yeah, this is going to happen no matter what?
You know, just because of my track record, right, I knew growth was going to happen. I haven't failed in that sense yet. Every company I've been at, we've grown substantially. I've led successful exits. So I wasn't scared of that. It was the tactics. How was I going to do it, right? I'm new to the M&A space as of the past 10 years, right? So when I joined ShareVault, really immersing myself in M&A was different. And so just understanding how were we going to navigate that, how I was going to navigate a bootstrapped company, all of those things. So I knew we would get there. It was just how long and how quick, mm-hmm. right? That was the challenge. Mm-hmm. So
what was your tactic?
You know, it's something that was taught to me early on from a mentor. You help enough people get to where they want to get to, naturally you're going to get to where you want to get to, right? You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so what I've done is I've built a go-to-market strategy which really embraces that, where when we're working with deal makers, investment bankers, PE firms, M&A attorneys, which are primary folks that we work with. And then, of course, their clients. If we can help them get to a successful exit, or if we can help them drive deal flow, or if we can help accelerate timelines, naturally, we're going to get to where we want to get to. And that's worked out really well for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to switch to your language now.
Okay.
And let's talk data rooms a little bit. How do you see them changing over the next few years?
You know, just like anything in the marketplace, AI is changing that landscape significantly. I think deal making today and how data rooms are perceived, are they just storage, somewhere to just drop documents and share them really quickly? I think there's going to be a huge shift because of AI, and we're trying to lead that shift, where data rooms are going to be the true source of intelligence to drive deals forward so that they have the best valuation, the best deal outcome. So I think AI is going to have a huge play in that world, and being used to drive intelligence and using intelligence as leverage in deal making.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of AI, do you hate it? Is that your biggest competitor right now?
You know what? I embrace it. I love it.
Okay.
You know, I'm an embracer of it. I'm very forward leaning on it. AI is used in everything I do today, right? I don't know how I'd lead a business without it at this point. That's how ingrained in everything I do it is, as well as how we embrace it within our company as well. Not just from our own product offering, but also just what we use it for on all our back-end systems. Mm-hmm. It's a must-have. And being a smaller bootstrapped company, it's actually a superpower for us. We can actually now compete with the 1,000-pound gorillas and compete at a much different level because we don't have to worry about laying off a bunch of employees, right?
Mm-hmm.
My employees embrace it because what it does to them is it allows them to take off the five hats they're wearing. And instead of wearing five, now they're wearing three hats, right? Or two hats.
Mm-hmm.
And they could really embrace what their core competence is because of that.
Mm-hmm. How do you see this like data and AI collaboration working out in the next couple of years? What is that going to look like process-wise or just overall relationship?
So I think, you know, well, let's talk about the relationship piece because I'd rather talk about that because it was an epiphany I had at this event, you know, and the last couple of events I've attended. You know, I used to think AI was going to replace salespeople. And that wasn't always my thinking. I kind of evolved to that. I started realizing, wow, you know, because of the pandemic, everybody's online. Everything's being recorded. There's plenty of recordings to learn from. AI is going to take over the salesperson's role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward, what I'm seeing is that people are fatigued with AI. Bot to bots talking. Now you don't know if it's a bot to bot. Are you really talking to a live person? Is that really a real person who sent you an email, etc., right? And so what I'm finding come full circle because of AI is that these types of interactions are becoming that much more powerful and meaningful. And so you're seeing events like AMNAA really having well attended, right? Good attendance. You're seeing all these other events, same thing. You're really starting to see that come back to the forefront where good forward-facing people who can have good conversations, it's a superpower again.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And also, everyone says data is everything, including me. I mean, you cannot do anything without data and, like, you know, analytic
right.
portion of a deal, especially when it comes to money.
Yep, yep.
So in deals, where do you see people still getting data wrong?
You know, I deal more on the document side of the data side, so I'm going to speak to the document side.
Okay.
So what we do is we store confidential documents during high-stakes transactions like fundraising, mergers and acquisitions, divestitures, litigation, etc., right? Where I see things going wrong is the belief that you just need to dump a bunch of documents into one spot. And the reality is you don't want to use it just as a data dump. You want to use a data room, as an example, to really drive deals forward. A data room, you know, how it's structured, how it's organized, it sends a powerful message to those people that you're going to market with, right? And the message that a good data room could send versus a bad data room unorganized data room is it's going to say you're unorganized, you're going to be hard to work with, you don't care about security, right? And those things, as you know, are just check marks against valuation, okay? We're going to devalue you, we're going to devalue you, et cetera. And so where I see, you know, data where it's important is really in how you position yourself in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a story to share with us about maybe like the most challenging deal you've ever dealt with? You don't have to name any businesses or any names, just like something that sticks in your memory to this day, maybe something that left bad aftertaste in your mouth.
Yeah.
Or something that it was very inspiring that you didn't even expect to go the way it went.
You know, I look at the good even in the difficult, right, and the hard ones and the challenging ones, because again, they stretch you, you learn from them. I would say, you know, a learning I've had is how important it is to sometimes say no. Mm-hmm. Right? There are certain customers that maybe just aren't going to be the best customers, that are going to be a lot of work, that are going to stretch you as an organization. But some of them might be waving a $1 million check in front of you saying, but hold on, we got $1 million, right? And it's so easy for CEOs to say, well, hold on, let's go chase that. Let's go do that. What ends up happening is it stretches you beyond what you can be stretched, right? Both from a engineering, a product standpoint, how many people need to get involved to support the deal because you're not doing the things they wish you did, right? And so my experience would be, it was a large government entity. I wouldn't say it was a bad experience. It was just an experience we really grew and learned from. And the learning was, we want to make sure we don't sign up for too much. That's going to overstretch us with these strategic customers. Mm-hmm. Right?
How do you feel about people who don't believe in data?
Say that one more time. Say that one more.
So, like, how do you feel about people who just like say data is not important? You know, Steven's business and what he's doing is not important. I don't understand why I should pay him for his services.
Right.
How do you feel about people like that?
You know, I don't run into them very often anymore because data is just at the center of everything we do, right? So I'm trying to actually reflect back further back. I feel like if you don't believe in data, you're probably not going to be around. You're going to end up being a Nokia who gets left behind, or a BlackBerry that gets left behind, right? That's just the reality of it. Just like with AI, right? If you don't believe in AI, I'm sorry, you're going to get left behind, right? Mm-hmm. AI is, yes, it is going to replace jobs, but where it's really going to replace people is if you're not going to use it and adopt it in your day-to-day workload, mm-hmm. You're definitely going to get left behind, right?
Absolutely.
So,
And from your perspective, what separates a clean, efficient deal process from a painful one? Once again, if you have a story regarding this, I would love to hear it.
You know, I have a million stories on this particular one.
Please,
because you know what happens.
One.
You know what happens most often in the data room space is, oh my God, someone's knocking on my door and they want to buy my business. We need a data room. We need to get it up and going. And their documents are a mess. Everything's scattered. Everything's disorganized. And so where I see companies that really get it wrong is that they're not always deal ready. And that's just the reality. If you talk to any of these investment bankers, M&A attorneys, etc., they're going to tell you, be deal ready. So when someone knocks on your door, you're not being reactive. You're already proactive. You have your ducks in a row. You're organized. You're ready to go, right? Because as you know, over the past 5 years, time kills deals. I mean, it is truly the deal killer in our space, right? You saw with the pandemic, if you missed selling your business in a particular month, then all of a sudden now it's getting drug out for 18 months and may not even be able to sell your business because of supply chain issues, right? Those types of things can creep up. Just the things going on with geopolitical, right? Another example of something that could kill deals. So I think just what folks need to really do is they need to, from the beginning, just start thinking about it. If you have selling your business at mind, start structuring your documents now. Get a data room early. Start organizing them, structuring, add to it every month so that when someone does come knocking on your door, because that's what you hope for, right? You know, companies are bought, not sold. You hope someone's going to randomly come to you and say, hey, I'm interested, versus you're going out to market and selling your business. That is the best case scenario.
So, absolutely. Yeah. And go to ShareVault. Is it ShareVault.com?
It is ShareVault.com. Yes.
Yes. And ask Steven for help.
Definitely.
So hard
Appreciate
knock
the plug.
Question. Yes, absolutely. Hard knock question. What's one mistake you see buyers or sellers make over and over again that just drives you crazy?
Wow. One, they underestimate the process, right? One of the number one jobs that I hear investment bankers have to do is reset expectations. They think, hey, I got this great business. All you need to do is help me sell it and it'll sell like a hotcake, right? It's like the real estate market. You know, my house will sell in a week later. That's just not the case, right? It takes 6 to 8 months on average. And that's if you're buttoned up. And so, again, I think this goes back to what I just spoke to earlier. The mistake I see them making is kind of twofold. One, they aren't ready. They haven't structured their documents. They don't have their housekeeping in order. You really need to focus on the operational side of things, making sure that that's the data governance and everything else. I think that's one of the most important things that I see people miss. Number two is when it comes to the data room usage, they just think of it as, hey, let's just dump all our documents there. And really, you need to create a narrative out of those documents, right? Mm-hmm. So where I see a lot of folks making the mistake is they just think it's documents. No, it's not documents. It's how you're positioning your business, right? It's the narrative that goes behind it. It's the self-diligence that you do to make sure that if someone was going to buy your business, you put yourself in their shoes. What are they going to ask about the documents you're sharing and having those responses ready?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely. And another one of the hard knock questions.
Yeah.
What do people underestimate about the process and just like data overall most of the time?
You know, I think my response is similar to the previous response, to be honest on that one. When it comes to the process, really, I guess to add to that, I think I've ran into several founders that think they could do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it takes a team, right? It's just like raising a kid. It takes a village. To sell your business, it takes a village, right? You need a good wealth manager. You need a good investment banker. You need a good M&A attorney, right? So I think that's what I would lean in on to add to my previous comment about mm-hmm. where I see it kind of go wrong.
What about trusting the technology?
Yeah.
A lot of people are skeptical.
A lot of people are skeptical on technology as a whole, right? Like they mm-hmm. think they could just get it done with a Google Drive, right? that's just the reality
yes.
of it. So, yeah, you know, trust is earned, right? And so I think as a technology provider, that's one of the things we're challenged with is we have to make sure that we earn that trust to get a seat at the table, to get a shot at being able to prove ourselves. I think there's no doubt about it that if you talk to any credible M&A person, they're going to say they would prefer a data room used during a due diligence process versus maybe what we call a accidental competitor like a Google Drive, right? Because it really, when you trust the technology, what you get out of it is you get structure, you get data, and you get compliance, right? A lot of people forget about the compliance component. You know, at the end of a deal, you don't want to find yourself in litigation and you don't have this compliance archive that says, well, hold on, I did show him that data, right? So you have to trust the data in that sense and trust the technology to be able to arm you with that type of information if you got called into litigation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say to all of our listeners, trust the data and trust the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How does ShareVault earn trust?
You know, we earn it just like what we're doing today here at AMNAA, right, at these events. I don't have to be here. I choose to be here. I have a team and a staff that's here. They meet with folks, but I try to do the same. I try to lead from the trenches. So when it comes to trusting us, you know, we're here. We're in your ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
We're front and center. We're present. And we really lean in on the security side, right? So when it comes to our platform, we're ISO certified. We've gone through the NIST audits, you know, GDPR, et cetera. But really, it's the presence within the community that really helps build that credibility and that trust. The fact that we're strategically partnered with MNAA, we have other strategic partnerships as well across other industries, being front and center, it really helps, right? You're not going to find a ShareFile CEO here at this event. It's mm-hmm. just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to find the ShareVault CEO here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what's next for ShareVault? I mean, you guys already have reached a pretty impressive height. And where do you go from here?
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you love our impressive height and obviously the role I play in M&A.
Yes.
Yeah.
You also had an impressive, very inspiring journey, too. I respect people like that.
Thank you. I would say, you know, where I see us going is I think there's an opportunity to consolidate the bottom half of the market for virtual data rooms, and I'd love to lead that initiative. So most of what we've done today has been through organic growth. I could see a roll-up strategy happening, right, where we roll up a few companies under our belt. Really, I want to go after the 1,000-pound gorillas and show that there's a better way to do things, a more efficient, more productive, that drives better business outcomes for the bankers, for the PE firms, for their clients, et cetera. So really, we're on this path to continue to grow and scale. And ultimately, hopefully find ourselves in some roll-ups.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one day there will be a collaboration, ShareWorld and ChatGPT.
Yeah, exactly. We have quite a bit that we're doing in the AI space. So stay tuned. We got plenty
stay
of AI
tuned,
related.
No.
Yes, yes.
So is there a point where growth becomes less about scale and more about impact?
I think ShareWorld's at that point. So yes, I actually really do. I think growth and scale in the early stages, all about validating your market, validating your customers, right? Validating what your product can do. We're past that. We're well past that, right? For us, we're really focused on impact, right? We've kind of got to that stage where, you know, if you focus on impact, you're going to get growth and scale, right? Because that means you're adding value across the cycle of what we focus on. The answer to your question, I think there's a big difference. ShareVault's at that point where it's all about impact. We're trying to focus on making sure that we're driving the right business outcomes. Folks are getting the valuations that they wanted. They're getting deals done faster. All of those really help drive the longevity of how long they're going to use ShareVault and what they think about using ShareVault for.
Mm-hmm. And as someone in a leadership position, what lesson have you learned the hard way?
What lesson have I learned the hard way? You know, I would say that, I used to think I can outwork bad processes, and I learned that the hard way. There comes a point where, yes, that is very true. You can. Early stage, later stage, hard work and grind does not trump having good processes and systems in place, right? Things that are repeatable. So that's a big lesson I learned, and I learned it the hard way, right?
What happened?
We had some systems in place that... really, obviously being bootstrapped, again, this comes back to being a bootstrapped company really taught me the lesson. You're already resource constrained, right? Mm-hmm. You're already limited on people and you're limited on cash. When you have bad systems and bad processes in place, what ends up happening is you can't go to market as quick as you want to. Competitors can pass you up really quickly, right? Because now what you have is you have a marketing person who's focused on the tech behind the marketing versus on actually going out and marketing, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us, what happened is we had a bit of a stall where we had to stop and say, okay, let's put in new systems, new processes that are going to allow us to scale to that next level. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've been doing for the past couple of years, is really doubling down on being operationally excellent.
Mm-hmm. So on this podcast, I like to ask our guests a quick fire round of questions. You don't have to think too hard, just maybe one word answer. And we don't have to elaborate on your answer either. Maybe people in comments can judge you if they'd like or support you.
Don't judge me.
You ready? I just have four questions for you. Okay. One trend in M&A you're most excited about?
I'm most excited about the dry powder that's sitting out there. We've been seeing this just incline of dry powder that's sitting out there waiting to get deployed. So I think that trend, I'm excited about it. I think we're getting to a point where it's going to start to get deployed and it's going to really open up the deal flow for ourselves at ShareVault, but also for our investment bankers and really start to drive the deals.
Mm-hmm. One trend you're skeptical of?
You know, it's kind of goes back to the piggybacks of the question you asked me about how I felt about AI. It's AI, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical of what's really going to drive change. What's really going to drive the increase in productivity and efficiency? What's real? What's not? Right. So I think that's one thing I'm skeptical of, is a lot of the companies that are touting all these workflow improvements, etc., and really they're not driving the end result. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure at ShareVault that hopefully we stay ahead of that and we're actually driving the end result, the impact, as we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Best advice you've ever received?
Yeah, I've had some pretty strong mentors, so I have lots of good advice. I would say the best advice goes back to what I said earlier. Help enough people get to where they want to get to. Naturally, you're going to get to where you want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always sat well with me. The other one is probably going to be fake it till you make it, right? Fake it till you make it. Right? Exactly. Those two are competing, so.
Right. So before we wrap this up, I know that you guys actually have a podcast.
We do. Yeah, it's called This is M&A.
This is M&A. Yep. Okay, so you are our competitors.
In a way, we are.
And also colleagues.
Exactly.
So where can people find your podcast and, you know, check it out and give it a listen?
Yeah, we would appreciate if you subscribe, like and subscribe. It's called This is M&A. It's deal making without the BS. So we try to get into the raw insights that you can learn from people who are on the front lines, mm-hmm. not the noise, but really the signal. Mm-hmm. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon. We're across all channels, so you can find us pretty much anywhere.
Perfect. And what kind of guests and topics do you usually cover on your podcast?
Yeah, so typically our guest speakers are private equity firms, investment bankers. We like to talk about CEOs who are growing, scaling. Really, anybody who's either growing, scaling, or exiting a business, that's really who we're trying to be front and center, or who's part of that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks that we have as our guest speakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check it out on YouTube. You said Spotify.
Spotify.
Anywhere you get your podcasts,
exactly.
Pretty much. Yes, and it's called, once again?
It's called This Is M&A.
This Is M&A. Not M&A Access. You can also check us out on,
yes,
Spotify as well, and YouTube, like and subscribe. But This Is M&A with Steve Monterosso.
Yes. Thank you.
And last question. If someone wants to build a long-respected career, you're in this space, your best networking advice?
Ooh, best networking advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to networking, I think you got to know when to shut it down and when not shut it down. Meaning, you'll find a lot of people that will spin your wheels and spend a lot of time, and it leads to nowhere. When you go to network, you got to go there with intent, right? And so you got to know when you're going to add value to the conversation, or they're going to add value, and when they're not. And where they're not, shut it down and move on to the next, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, we're all here to drive deals forward, to mm-hmm. help propel our businesses. Those distractive conversations aren't going to help that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for visiting me today here at M&A Access and also our conference.
Thank you for being here.
We hope to see you again next year.
Definitely. I enjoyed it. I think it's a great conference. So thank you for having me.
These kinds of conversations are happening all the time. We'd love for you to join in, whether it's through our monthly webinars, our biannual conferences, or our SEMA certification, and then we have our chapter events across the nation all year round. You can find out more at amaaonline.com. Until then, see you next time.